Please be seated.
Clerk, please call the next case.
P. Musgrove Construction Company, Inc. versus Young, William T. Wallace, Jr., Jason R. White, and appellate counsel, Eric A. Ferguson, appellate.
May it please the court, my name is Jason Whiting of Johnson, Ayers, and Matthews, and I represent the appellant T. Musgrove Construction Company. I'm going to do my best to try to reserve 3 minutes of rebuttal time, knowing that I have to keep track of that. At the outset, I am so sorry for the confusion that led to my being late today. I am profoundly embarrassed, and I just hope that that embarrassment stays with me and doesn't trickle down to my law firm, which has a great reputation. And so, thank you for indulging the delay. This case appears to me, from looking at the cases that this court has looked at over the past few years, is kind of rare. Quantum Merowit, it doesn't come up very often, it seems. As you know, quantum merowit is used interchangeably, that phrase, with contracts implied in law and unjust enrichment. It's an equitable claim, and the whole point is to make sure that a person or an entity does not get unjustly enriched at the expense of another. And so the law, when there is no actual contract in fact, no express contract or contract in fact, will create one to prevent unjust enrichment. The three assignments of error here, 1, 2, and 3, respectively, are that the court erred in not recognizing that Foxfire Towing did not provide sufficient evidence in order to prove the reasonable value of the services it alleges unjustly enriched T. Musgrove Construction Company. That is an assignment of error that has to do, obviously, with the sufficiency of evidence before the trier of fact. The second assignment of error has to do with what services actually benefited T. Musgrove Construction Company, that specific named party, such that they were unjustly enriched, regardless of what the reasonable measure of damages is in the matter. And then, so that's also a sufficiency of evidence issue. And then the third assignment of error has to do with whether or not Foxfire Towing failed to mitigate its damages as a matter of law. And that is specifically on just one part of the big invoice that's at issue here, and that is $46,000 in change for, quote-unquote, storing a wrecked dump truck where the evidence says that the value of it is $2,000, and the record shows that that dump truck was never returned to the possession of T. Musgrove Construction. Rushing to get here, I'm trying to decide which way to start, and if the court doesn't have any particular assignment of error that it has questions on from the start, I'd like to start with what I think is the easiest one to wrap my head around, which is the last one, actually, the mitigation of damages. It seems to me that involves the vast majority of the verdict, which was in excess of $55,000. And the issue is whether or not keeping a company's dump truck, according to the record, in the back of Craig Young's house in the woods for more than 3 years, and then never returning that truck whatsoever, whether or not that in and of itself, just as a matter of law, is a failure to mitigate damages when we're talking about a truck that was wrecked, was a total loss, and according to the only evidence in the record, had about a salvage value of $2,000.
Counsel, excuse me. Did you make, during the trial, was there evidence presented by you or your client in reference to mitigation of damages? Mitigation of whatever the cost, if you say it's $2,000. I think there was some testimony to that.
Yes, Your Honor. There was testimony. I had asked Linda Musgrove, who is a co-owner of T. Musgrove Construction Company, whether or not they put a value on the property, on the corporate property, the truck. And she testified, yes, $2,000 would be a salvage value that a truck, it was an old dump truck, it would have about a $2,000 salvage value. And then the jury made a specific finding, as the court may have seen in the record, which is unusual because they weren't asked to, but they still did. They made a specific finding on the verdict form that states that they reduced the verdict in the amount of the value they found for the truck, which was exactly $2,000, which was an uncontested amount at trial. To answer your question more fully, though, I believe that there's also a jury instruction, which I was just looking through here trying to find jury instructions in the appendix, and they're not here, but I think that the court has access to the jury instructions from the trial court's record. But if I recall correctly, and I'm sure that my friend Mr. Ferguson will correct me if I'm wrong, in the record that was submitted to the court, the jury instructions start at page 160, but I believe that there was a failure to mitigate damages jury instruction that was provided to the jury. So we did create an issue on that fact. I'd be the first to admit that the amount of attention that was given to it was...
So at any point was there evidence that Foxfire knew at the beginning of the storage term, look, this thing is only worth $2,000. I need to figure out something to do with it because obviously I'm not going to be able to bill them for $50,000 on this. I mean, or did they say, well, look, where is the owner? Why isn't he communicating with me?
Candidly, no. There's no evidence as to the subjective understanding of Foxfire at the time that they...
Well, that's sort of important, isn't it? I mean, Foxfire can't take it upon themselves to haul the thing down to a salvage yard and get a $2,000 check and hunt down M. Musgrove Construction Company and give it to them.
I believe that my response, Your Honor, would be respectfully that the duty to mitigate damages is not something that rears its head just at the moment, at the beginning in this case, the storage time period, but rather during the course of time that you're dealing with the issue at hand, does there come a point when it's unreasonable to keep charging for something 20 times beyond its value, especially when, you know, the subject matter is being litigated for years before it gets to this point?
Why didn't your company go get the truck?
I think that the evidence in the record, Your Honor, is that they did, but they were only somebody showed up and they were able to take the logs away that were in the truck originally, but they held on to the truck because there was an outstanding bill of over $12,000 at the time.
Okay, help me remind me of the facts. When did the request for the return of the truck get made and denied based upon the assertion of the towing lien?
There was no specific date testified to at trial, Your Honor. And then the only other thing that I would add for whatever it's worth on the mitigation of damages part is that, you know, there is a statutory lien process, a garage keeper's lien process that is meant to actually avoid this very situation, which allows a garage keeper, after a certain period of time, 10 days, to go ahead and issue a notice to the owner of the vehicle that they are going to auction off the vehicle in order to satisfy some portion of the underlying service charges. That's something that, if Your Honor is just looking at the practical nature of what could have happened differently.
Counsel, is that required in these types of cases? Is it required that they take the vehicle and sell it or salvage it in some way? Is that your allegation there? It is their responsibility it's basically to sell it, salvage it, whatever you would do with that truck?
I would not go so far to make a specific, you know, apply a specific duty to what every tow company would have to do, regardless of the circumstances. What I would go back to is that they have a duty to mitigate damages to reduce the amount of
so your answer would be no, is that?
My answer would be no, there would not be a duty to automatically go through the garage keeper's lien process. At least I'm not aware of any.
Was the jury told about that option? Was the jury instructed,
not.
As a matter of law, here are the options that the plaintiff had. You need to judge the reasonableness of their response in light of the fact that the law gave them some options.
They were not.
I have to confess, you make some great arguments, particularly Simon of Error number 2, but the case is not terribly well developed. to get to the heart of the question, which is, have we lost sight of quantum merit? Which is a very, very good question to ask this court.
So what I'll do then is focus my attention on assignment of error number one, if I may. Assignment of error number one is that the trier of fact was not provided sufficient evidence in order to actually decide what is reasonable compensation in this case. Unjust enrichment is not about, or quantum merit is not about, you know, did the plaintiff charge what they normally charge? If that was the standard, then there would be no element of proving reasonable value of services. My understanding of the law is that the trier of fact needs to be able to understand within the particular industry, here the commercial recovery industry, what would be reasonable under the circumstances of this case. So that would include, you know, in the background, is it reasonable to bring out a 65-ton rotating crane-style wrecker, a bunch of trucks pulling hazmat trailers, you know, a skid steer, all these different things that they did, charging $700 for headsets that they used and then billed it as an OSHA requirement, and all of these things. The jury needs to know, number one, what's reasonable for a commercial towing operation, what's reasonable for them to do when they come out to the scene.
Can I shift your gears for a second?
Absolutely.
Assignment of error two is asking a different question, which is not how you calculate the reasonable value of the service, but what services were actually benefiting this corporate client, the owner of a vehicle.
And we submit that the answer is not much, if any. So,
towing, obviously the vehicle owner's got to get the truck off the ravine. So
yes.
Towing is clearly benefiting him, so put a reasonable number on that. Then you get the whole storage thing, which is really the gigantic a question in the case. But fixing the cherry tree, you know, bringing your headset out and doing your hazmat routine, maybe you can strip all that off, but that doesn't get you very far in this case.
Well, I think the question is, at the heart of it, is a vehicle owner, by virtue purely of being a vehicle owner, what is their duty when that vehicle, for one reason or another, is involved in an accident? And I see no reason, I don't see where the state law would say that the vehicle owner is responsible for any liability of a tortfeasor, for example, for remediation of property damage, right? And that's what a lot of this is. It's a tow company that comes out, and the record is clear. The state police did not tell Foxfire Towing to chop up a cherry tree, to excavate soil, any of that stuff. The record is crystal clear that, actually, it's clear that they didn't even tell Foxfire to come out. But they come out nonetheless, and for reasons that are not very clear in the record, they take over the operation, and they do all of these services, which are unsolicited. And then they say, well, we're going to go after T. Musgrove Construction Company because it's on the title of the truck. But what that really, in my eyes, attempts to do is say, look, an accident occurred. Somebody is ultimately going to be responsible, theoretically, for any damages that arise out of it. But that's not...
But there's no vicarious liability, no responding spirit.
Exactly, exactly.
The truck owner is as much a victim of this accident as the cherry tree owner.
I mean, perhaps. I think that's technically correct, even though it sounds odd on a gut level.
Well, if I borrowed your car and I ran it into a ditch, you'd be mad with me, right?
I would. So then getting to the heart of the question, I guess, is, you know, what can we say, looking back at these facts, what was the windfall that T. Musgrove Construction Company received at the expense of Foxfire? What truly is it? And the most you can say, I believe, with a straight face, is, well, look, it is their truck, and ultimately that truck would have had to have been removed from the VDOT ravine. Otherwise, that would, I guess, be trespass. And so, theoretically, it would have had to be done.
That's $500.
And that's $500. Of course, then we get back to the question of whether or not, you know, the first assignment of error and how that plays in there. But other than that, there is no way for the trier of fact to distinguish between all of these charges, these 4-hour minimum charges on the invoice, you know, what applies to the excavation of the soil, to the cutting up of timber, which I want to make this clear because I know this will come up here in a few minutes. The record, page 152 and 153 of the appendix, is clear that you know, the only testimony is that these folks were not acting as employees of the company, that the logs had nothing to do with T. Musgrove Construction Company. I have 5 seconds.
Let me ask you, even if the logs did not belong to the T. Musgrove Construction Company, since they were the owner of the vehicle in which the logs were being transported, wouldn't they have had an obligation to get up whatever fell off their truck?
I'm unaware of any specific law that would require that to be the case.
Well, there's certainly a statute that says that if the state police had ordered somebody to come to the scene to clean it up, that the carrier would be responsible for any freight that was on their vehicle.
I confess
you don't know anything about it. Don't worry about it.
I do not.
Don't worry about it.
And that concludes my time. I thank you. Thanks very much for your patience.
Ferguson. I'm here on behalf of Craig Young Trading as Foxfire Towing. I'm asking the court today to affirm, to deny the appeal request by T. Musgrove Construction Company and affirm the finding of the Circuit Court of Franklin County. There are three reasons why. Now, first, the evidence that was offered at trial was sufficient to prove the reasonable value of the services rendered by Foxfire Towing on behalf of T. Musgrove Construction Company. Secondly, T. Musgrove Construction Company did benefit from the work done by Foxfire, all of it. And finally, T. Musgrove Construction Company had an affirmative, they had the burden of proof on the mitigation of damage issue, and they offered absolutely no evidence other than the fact that this truck had a salvage value of $2,000. That's it. That was all that they presented. So I would like to, first of all, if I could, try to address the issues that have been of concern to the court.
One thing, Brian, just to nail this down. This was an equitable action for unjust enrichment, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And that's why you all had the advisory jury as opposed to a regular jury?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, go ahead.
Then, of course, there were two other issues on a counterclaim filed by T. Musgrove Construction Company for which the decision of the jury was actually a binding finding. There was a fraud and conversion claim that the jury denied. So the first question that I would like to address would be the issue involving the benefit rendered to T. Musgrove Construction Company in this case. I hope that it doesn't avoid paying attention to that the vice president of T. Musgrove Construction Company was in this truck at the time of this accident.
But there's no allegation of vicarious liability, responding superior, or agency relationship.
No, Your Honor.
The son and his buddy were on a mission of their own. But Mr. Corporation had nothing to do with this. It's just somebody wrecked the corporation's truck. That's all the corporation knew.
Judge, with all respect, I would ask that may be one way to look at the evidence, but this jury heard evidence that would suggest otherwise also.
That there was a respondent superior relationship, that they were actually working within the scope of the corporate entity's business when they were driving this truck?
Your Honor, that they were on a mission that was designed to help them make money because the corporation couldn't pay it. I don't think the work that they were doing was corporate work, but because they couldn't be paid by the corporation for work they had done, they were able to go cut these logs off of property.
So could the cherry tree owner sue the corporation and say your son and his buddy just ran your truck into our cherry tree?
No, Your Honor, they did not.
No, could they, under your logic?
I don't think they could have sued the corporation. No, Your Honor, I believe they could have sued the driver, whoever that might have been.
Right, I agree with that. So there's no vicarious liability.
That would be correct, Your Honor. Except that if you believe that they were driving this truck on a corporate mission, then they had the accident. The tow company doesn't come out, they don't ask who's responsible for it, they start cleaning it up. And so the benefit has to be to somebody.
But if I borrowed your car and ran it off the road, a permittee, so I'm covered by your insurance, but I borrow your car, run it off the road, I run into some guy's cherry tree, they couldn't sue you, could they, the cherry tree guy? So you
wouldn't benefit under that set of facts.
Fixing the cherry tree doesn't benefit or hurt you one way or the other, so you're just not involved. Now, I would be. It would certainly help me.
Your Honor, I'm not sure how the cherry tree got injured. I don't know if the cherry tree got injured with the tow company remediated. I don't have any idea how the cherry tree was injured. I don't think there was ever any evidence. It just says that there was a cherry tree injured. Cherry tree was torn up. They had to remove it.
Well, doesn't that hurt you? I mean, how could that be a benefit to them when you don't even know why they?
Well,
why they?
They know that the cherry tree had to be replaced and repaired, Your Honor. But I don't know how the cherry tree got injured. I just know that in the process of cleaning up this scene, this cherry tree got involved.
So we don't even know if the tow truck accident caused the damage to the cherry tree. So you're two steps removed from the questions Justice Kelsey and Justice Goodwin are asking. If you don't know how it happened, it could have happened 2 weeks ago.
All I can tell you, Judge, is that the gentleman that did the work, cleaned up, said that the cherry tree was damaged. And he cleaned it up.
So I ask how the gentleman came to be involved? He's not claiming that he was involved under 46.2.12.12.1, is he? Because I didn't see any indication that he was called out by state police.
Well, he was called out by. There was a call made by state police to another
tow truck operator.
And that tow truck operator called him because he couldn't do the job.
Did your tow truck operator call him, or was he monitoring the line on his whatever radio he used to monitor the line?
Judge, I don't know if he was monitoring or not. I know there was some cell phone conversation, according to the evidence offered at the trial, between the two tow truck operators. But the one thing that was clear, the tow truck operator that was called testified at this trial, and he said, I couldn't do this work. And the state trooper testified that it's not uncommon for them to call each other and work together to clean these incident scenes up. More importantly, in this particular case, the question comes up about what the testimony is about reasonable services. The appellant has admitted in the brief that Foxfire Towing was the only tow truck remediation company in Franklin County or under the call list of the trooper that could have done this work. The trooper's the only one that could have. The trooper testified that they were the only company on their list that could do this work. I'm not sure who else could have testified about the reasonable value of the services if the only person in the area who does that kind of work is doing it. And, of course, Rule 2:701 says lay witness testimony is admissible as long as it's based on their perception or their experience and their observations and that it aids the trier of fact. All of those things were present here. Craig Young, trading as Foxfire Towing, testified at length about everything that they did, every piece of equipment that they used, everything that they did, and offered pictures that are all a part of the joint appendix as to what they did using every piece of equipment that was necessarily used. We then presented all of these invoices that he had presented earlier using the same charges, which were his consistent charges, that were always paid.
How many months or years was the truck in your client's backyard?
It would have been, judged from the time of the accident in 2015 until right now.
All right. How does it benefit the owner of the truck to have his truck in your backyard? Forget what you would charge for it if someone wanted to hire your backyard as a place to leave their truck. Well, what benefit is it to him? It's not worth anything. It's a constructive total loss. What benefit is it to him? Because this is not implied contract law that just allows you to charge anything that you would ordinarily charge if someone were to agree to it. It's implied contract law that presupposes that rational people would have, if they thought it through, actually entered into this kind of agreement. In other words, you don't imply anything other than what you would presuppose would be a rational express agreement. But it doesn't seem very rational at all for anybody to say, I'd really like to hire you for $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 to keep my $2,000 truck in your backyard for the next 30 years.
Judge, I, I'm not sure how to answer your question other than to say that if that were the case, then there would never be anybody towing and remediating vehicles and storing them. If there's not some benefit to them to have their vehicle protected, looked after, it's right there. Somebody's looking after it. It's where somebody's paying attention to it, whether you choose to look after it or not. The problem here is that T. Musgrove Construction Company did nothing. They just let it go.
Is there a point beyond which there is no benefit? Let's assume up to the point that someone just determined it was a total loss, it was worth $2,000. Is there a point over the last 3 years, 4 years, that your client should have made a decision that this is of no benefit to them? I mean, how long would you propose, I guess up to the jury verdict, that these charges would continue to accrue?
Judge, I'm sure that there is a time by which you would make that decision commercially. In this particular case, it was held for about a year, I'm thinking, before the lawsuit was filed and the litigation took off, at which time there was a non-suit involved in the case, and then it was refiled. So for about 2 years or 2.5 years of this time, that truck has been held while litigation has gone on around it.
Why don't you just hook the truck up and drive it to the defendant's place of business and throw the chain off and say, here's your daggone truck. I'm not going to keep it in my backyard for the next 5 years.
I guess you could do that, Judge.
Well, wouldn't that be a mitigation of loss?
It would have if that had been evidence presented at trial.
You need evidence to know that a towing company could not tow the truck from the place they towed it to some place where the defendant has his own little shop?
Yes, Judge, I think there does have to be evidence in that. I don't think that you can make that assumption. This court has said, used phrases such as trifling expense and reasonable exertion before in the Rosenberg versus Stone case in 1933 to talk about the obligations of the person who is being damaged in this particular case. I think that is appropriate. There was no evidence about
who's being damaged.
Well, if you're saying that my client has an obligation to mitigate his damages, he's being damaged. The Foxfire Towing is.
He didn't have any damages. He didn't have a. It's not like a loss-use consumer under the UCC. He's got a slot in the backyard where he keeps trucks, and he normally charges X dollars, but this particular $2,000 truck took up his income slot. He has no damages. This is either windfall or nothing if you tack on the $700 for moving it.
If you take that approach, Your Honor, then I would suggest that what the court would be saying is that he's obligated to use his land to protect this guy's truck.
No, I was saying the opposite. He's not obligated. He should have thrown a chain on the thing and drug it to the guy's house and said, you keep it in your backyard.
Judge, I might agree with the court if that evidence had been presented at trial.
Was that argument made at trial?
Excuse me?
Was that argument made at trial? That
No, it was not.
Was the argument made at trial that there's no benefit to T. Musgrove for this ongoing storage, and therefore Quantum Merowit fails because I'm not being benefited as the construction company?
We made the argument by virtue of the fact that he actually stored the vehicle and charged for it, and we asked the jury to award us all of the storage that
it's
he
not a hostile question. I mean, we have our rules of procedural default, and in these hard cases sometimes, you know, there's a number of great arguments that are left on the cutting room floor because they weren't advanced at trial. And I'm trying to sort out what's in front of us because there may be some problems with the case, but if it wasn't advanced at trial, there's not much we can do about it.
Well,
so it doesn't sound like the argument was made, according to you, that mitigation required him to hook the thing up to a trailer, dump it at T. Musgrove, and be done with it as a mitigation argument, and two, that there's no benefit to T. Musgrove for this ongoing storage. And so I think it'd be hard for us to reverse a case based on a possibly very good argument if it wasn't advanced at trial.
Well, Your Honor, I would suggest to the court that there was absolutely no evidence other than the value, the $2,000 value of the truck offered at trial as to mitigation. Nothing.
Right, and the other point goes to the benefit question, the other assignment of error. So I thought the arguments were focused on benefit with respect, because there's one set of charges for the remediation work and arriving at the scene. There's another set of charges for the storage. So I know there were some arguments advanced in connection with the at-the-scene work, but the question then is, was an argument advanced at trial in connection with no benefit to T. Musgrove, the corporation, on the storage component of this? That's what I'm asking you. Was that argument made?
There was no argument made by T. Musgrove Construction that we not receiving a benefit, other than the implication that the truck's only worth $2,000 and we're not responsible. Their argument was made that the truck was being used by an officer of the corporation on his personal business. That argument was made. So to the extent that reduces the benefit, I mean, is a no benefit argument.
Yeah, but the jury, you know,
the jury heard all of that evidence.
Right.
Heard all the argument. And what's I think important here is that the jury heard the evidence, the court heard the evidence. This motion to set aside what you're being asked to do, the court heard and denied and refused. They had the opportunity to see the witnesses. They had an opportunity to hear the evidence. And I would suggest in closing that Rule 2:701 allows Mr. Young to testify as the reasonable value of his services, just like he would if it was his property. And I would ask the court to affirm the decision of the Circuit Court of Franklin County. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All rise.
Court is adjourned.